You know those intricate patterns you sometimes see, like the delicate way smoke curls and drifts in the air, or maybe those really detailed frost patterns on a winter window pane?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
They look so random, almost, chaotic, yet there's often the surprising delicate structure that emerges, kind of wispy branching.
It is quite striking.
How do these seemingly unstructured patterns actually come into being?
Well, that's what we're diving into today.
Exactly. We're looking at a fascinating area of physics that explains these formations. It's called diffusion-limited aggregation, or DLA for short.
Right, DLA. And we're going back to a really foundational paper, aren't we, from 1981?
That's right. T.A. Witten Jr. and L.M. Sander. The title is Diffusion-Limited Aggregation, a Kinetic Critical Phenomenon. Really set the stage for a lot of work.
So our mission for this deep dive, we want to understand how a deceptively simple model, really just based on particles taking random walks, can create these complex, almost fractal structures we see in nature. Yeah, and how simulating these processes challenges our ideas about, well, order versus chaos.
And what it reveals about the critical nature of growth itself, it's about finding the beauty in randomness, really.
Precisely.
Okay, so let's unpack this. When we talk about these delicate branching aggregates, what kind of everyday things are we actually discussing? What do they look like?
We're talking about substances like gold black, which is a form of soot, or things like capocile, that's fumed silica, even coagulated aerosols like fine dust or smoke particles clumped together.
Okay, so tiny particles clumping.
Exactly. And if you could see them up close, they're universally recognized by that characteristic fragile, open, almost tree-like appearance you mentioned, very wispy.
Right.
But what's really fascinating and kind of counterintuitive is that the physical size of these clumps, these aggregates, is way bigger than the range of the actual forces holding the tiny particles together.
What does that imply then?
It strongly suggests that it's not just the stickiness of the particles, the specific forces. It's the process of aggregation itself, how they randomly come together, that's key to the final shape.
Ah, so the journey, not just the destination, shapes the structure.
You could say that, yeah.
Yeah,
It's a big shift in thinking.
it really is the process, not just the material. Now, the paper mentions a key experiment, one that really kicked off this whole line of inquiry. It involved metal particles and something called a puffball.
Huh, yes. The puffball. It does sound a bit whimsical for physics.
It does.
So researchers, Forrest and Witten specifically, did this experiment. They heated a plated filament, which produced a metal vapor.
Okay.
This vapor then condensed into these incredibly tiny metal particles. We're talking like 40 angstroms in radius. That's less than a nanometer. Really, Mike cracks the cow.
Wow, tiny.
Very. And these particles streamed outwards, accumulating in a thin spherical shell. And that shell is what they affectionately call the puffball, about a centimeter across,
It's a
roughly.
free floating there.
Essentially, yes. And within this puffball region, the particles would bump into each other and coalesce or stick together. Then these clumps, these aggregates, would drift down onto an electron microscope slide so they could get a really close look.
And what do they see?
Well, the crucial observation was that these aggregates were incredibly low-density masses, fluffy almost, often containing, get this, around 10 million individual metal particles.
10 million in
Ah.
something so wispy.
Exactly. And crucially, they kept that delicate branching shape even after drifting down. That suggested it was irreversible coalescence. Once they stuck, they stayed stuck. No rearranging.
Okay.
So the hypothesis was simple. Particles just stuck together whenever their random thermal motion they're jiggling around brought them into contact.
So they had these visually striking, really delicate structures. But you mentioned earlier, it wasn't just the look. There was a mathematical finding, something about a fractional power law. Why was that such a critical clue?
Yes, precisely. It wasn't just, oh, that looks interesting. Forrest and Witten showed that if you looked at the density within these aggregates, how packed the particles were, it showed a specific pattern. The density correlations fall off as a fractional power of distance.
Okay, what does that mean in simpler terms?
It means that as you move further away from any given particle inside the aggregate, the density of other particles doesn't drop off smoothly or linearly. It drops off according to a power law, but the exponent in that law is a fraction, not a whole number.
And that's unusual.
Very. It was a huge clue.
Yeah.
It suggested something much more complex and structured than just, you know, randomly packing spheres together. It looked like the kind of behavior you see in what physicists call critical phenomena systems, right at a tipping point.
Right. Okay, so particles are just randomly wandering and sticking. My gut still tells me it should sort of fill in the space, you know, create a solid, compact blob and not these delicate branching things. Why couldn't a simple model explain this?
That's a really good question, and it gets right to the heart of why DLA was needed. The simplest model people often thought about for this kind of growth is called the Eden model.
Eden model.
Yeah. Imagine a grid, like graph paper. You start with one filled square, the seed. Then you just randomly pick an empty square right next to any filled square and fill it in. Repeat, repeat, repeat.
Okay, seems simple enough.
It is. And the Eden model does produce clusters. But they tend to be relatively compact, pretty dense, almost like a growing snowball or a stain spreading on paper. Solid-ish.
Not wispy.
Not wispy at all. And critically, their density correlations, that mathematical pattern we talked about, is pretty much independent of distance within the cluster. It just doesn't match that fractional power law seen in the real metal aggregates.
So the Eden model didn't capture the fractal nature.
Exactly. The real aggregates, with their open branching structure, looked much more like critical phenomena. That suggested a different, more subtle process was at play.
Okay, so if the Eden model gives you a blob, what did match? How did Witten and Sander actually design a model, the DLA model, that captured this unique, wispy behavior?
Well, they came up with a really elegant variation, the diffusion-limited aggregation model. It's surprisingly simple in concept. You start, again, with a seed particle at the center of a lattice, like our graph paper.
Okay, one seed.
Then you introduce a second particle, but you place it randomly somewhere very far away from the seed, essentially out in the wilderness, where it can't immediately see the cluster.
Far away, got it.
Now, this second particle starts to perform a random walk. It moves randomly, step by step, across the lattice, just wanders around aimlessly.
Like a drunkard's walk, they sometimes call it.
Exactly like that. It stumbles around until it eventually happens to land on a square adjacent to the seed particle, or later, adjacent to any part of the growing cluster.
And then,
bang, it sticks. Permanently. It becomes part of the cluster and doesn't move again.
Okay, stick and stop.
Stick and stop. Then the process repeats. You release another particle far away. It random walks, wanders around, and eventually bumps into the cluster somewhere. And it sticks.
What if it wanders off the edge of the simulation?
Good point. If a particle hits the boundary of the simulated space before it finds the cluster, it's just removed, considered lost, and a new particle is introduced far away to try again.
Okay, so random walks from far away, stick on contact. But I'm still trying to picture why that process specifically leads to the wispy branching structure instead of just filling things in eventually.
Right, that's the magic of it. It comes down to something the paper calls the shadowing effect.
Shadowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think about the cluster as it starts to grow little branches. Now imagine a new particle starting its random walk from far away. Where is it most likely to hit the cluster first?
Probably one of the bits sticking out the furthest.
Exactly. It's much more likely to hit the exposed tips of these branches than it is to navigate all the way into the deeper nooks and crannies near the center. Those inner perimeter sites are effectively shadowed by the outer branches. They're shielded from the incoming random walkers.
Ah, I see. So the outer parts catch all the new particles.
Pretty much. It means particles are far more likely to attach to the outer, most exposed parts of the structure. This makes those tips grow even faster, extending the branches, while the inner regions fill in much more slowly, if at all.
Leading to that less compact, highly branched, delicate form.
Precisely. It's like a competition for these diffusing particles, and the most accessible points win, reinforcing the branching structure.
That makes intuitive sense now. The exposed tips grow faster because they see more walkers, and they actually simulated this on a computer back in 81. What did those simulations look like? Did they nail the wispy appearance?
They absolutely did. There's a figure in the paper, figure one, showing a cluster of 3,600 particles grown on a square lattice, and it clearly, unmistakably has that wispy, fractal-like look.
Just like the real things.
Very much so. It's dramatically less compact than an Eden cluster would be.
Mm.
You see intricate branching, lots of open space. They also mentioned they tried it on a triangular lattice and got the same general appearance, which showed it wasn't just an artifact of using squares.
So it's robust.
It seemed to be, yes. It was a strong visual confirmation that their simple rules were capturing something essential about the real-world process.
Okay, so the visuals matched up. But what about the math? That fractional power law you mentioned, the smoking gun from the real metal particles, did the DLA simulations replicate that precise mathematical signature?
This was really the clincher, the make-or-break test for the model. The researchers measured that density correlation function, CRR, for their simulated DLA clusters. Remember, that tells you how density changes as you move away from a particle.
Right.
And incredibly, they found that CRR for their simulated clusters followed a clear power law relationship over a pretty significant range of distances, just like the real ones. But here's the amazing part. The specific numerical value they calculated for the exponent in that power law for the square lattice, it was about -0.343, plus or minus a tiny bit.
Okay.
That value was remarkably close, practically identical within the error bars, to the exponent Forrest and Witten had measured in their actual metal particle aggregates, which was around 0.32.
That's stunningly close.
It really is. This wasn't just a qualitative match anymore. It was quantitative. Mm. It showed that this simple diffusion and sticking mechanism could accurately replicate the complex, non-trivial mathematical structure found in the real physical system. That's powerful validation.
Did they double-check their math? It seems almost too good to be true for such a simple model.
They were careful. To make sure their method of calculating this correlation function was sound, they actually tested their program on a known mathematical fractal, a Koch curve.
Ah, the snowflake curve thing.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
It has a precisely known fractal dimension, or Hausdorff dimension. They confirmed that their program measured the correlation exponent for the Koch curve exactly as theory predicted. That gave them immense confidence that their results for the DLA clusters were reliable.
Okay, so the method was solid. The results matched reality. Impressive.
And there was more. The paper also notes how the overall size of the simulated aggregate, let's call it R, scales with the number of particles, N. It follows another power law relationship. They measured the radius of gyration, which is basically a way to measure the spatial extent of the cluster for their DLA aggregates. And those measurements strongly supported the predicted scaling relationship. This further linked DLA to other known fractal-like structures, things like percolating clusters or random animals, showing it belonged to this broader family of objects studied in statistical physics. Table I in the paper lays out these comparisons.
Okay, this all sounds incredibly precise and structured for something that's fundamentally based on random walks. So why do they call it a kinetic critical phenomenon? What makes these aggregates critical objects? That sounds important.
It is important. It's right there in the title of the paper and captures a key insight. When physicists say something is critical, they usually mean it's at a special point where it exhibits what's called scale-independent correlations.
Scale-independent, meaning?
Meaning it looks statistically similar no matter how much you zoom in or zoom out. Think of a coastline. Its jaggedness looks similar whether you view it from a satellite or from a few meters away. Or think about a phase transition, like water boiling into steam. Right at the boiling point, you get fluctuations on all scales. DLA clusters have this property. They're branching. Sparse structure persists over a huge range of length scales.
So they resemble systems at a tipping point.
Exactly. They share this property with systems right at a critical point in thermodynamics or with other mathematical constructs like self-avoiding walks or percolating clusters. That's the critical part.
Okay, so what about the kinetic part? Why kinetic critical?
Ah, that's the really fascinating distinction here. Most critical phenomena studied in physics arise from systems in equilibrium. Think of that boiling water, it's reached a thermal balance. The system has settled into a stable state, maybe a lowest energy configuration, and the critical properties emerge from that equilibrium ensemble.
Right.
But DLA is different. The complexity, the scale invariant correlations, they don't come from a settled equilibrium state. They emerge entirely from the process of growth itself, which is irreversible. Once a particle sticks, it stays there. The cluster can't rearrange itself to find a lower energy state. It just keeps growing based on where the random walkers happen to land.
So the kinetic refers to the motion, the growth dynamic.
Exactly. It's a critical phenomenon driven by the kinetics, by the irreversible growth process,
yeah,
not by achieving some final static equilibrium. That makes it a prime example of a kinetic critical phenomenon. The history of how it grew matters fundamentally.
That's a really neat distinction. It's the continuous, irreversible building process that drives this complexity. This idea must connect to other things beyond tiny metal particles, right? Where else do we see this kind of diffusion-limited growth?
Oh, absolutely. This DLA model, despite its simplicity, turns out to be incredibly relevant. It's seen as a discrete, sort of simplified version of models for dendritic growth.
Dendritic growth, like dendrites and nerve cells.
Well, similar branching patterns, but here we mean things like the formation of snowflakes, those beautiful, intricate, six-fold symmetric branches. That's dendritic crystal growth. Or how metal crystals sometimes grow into tree-like structures within a malt.
Ah, okay. Snowflakes and crystals.
Right. In the more complex continuum models for that kind of growth, developed by people like Langer and Muller-Kumbar, you have a substance, like water vapor for a snowflake, diffusing through a medium towards a growing surface. The growth rate at any point on the surface depends on the concentration gradient, essentially how much stuff is arriving there.
Okay, that sounds like diffusion is limiting the growth.
Exactly. And the DLA model, even though it's on a lattice and uses random walkers, captures the essence of this. The probability of any perimeter site on the DLA cluster growing is directly related to the probability of a random walker arriving there, which itself acts like a discrete version of that concentration gradient in the diffusion equation.
So DLA mirrors the physics of diffusion controlling the growth shape.
Precisely. It shows how, in these diffusion-controlled situations, random fluctuations where the next particle happens to land get amplified. They dominate the process and lead directly to these irregular, highly branched structures rather than smooth, stable shapes.
It's amazing how these simple rules random walk stick connect so deeply. The paper also looks ahead, right? What did they see as the next steps for this DLA model?
Yeah, they definitely saw a lot of potential. The Monte Carlo simulation approach they used could easily be extended. You could run it in three dimensions, for instance, which is obviously more relevant for many real-world structures.
Right, we live in 3D.
Or even higher dimensions, mathematically speaking. They also suggested researchers could play with the initial conditions, like starting with a larger seed object instead of a single point. That could help understand things like the stable tip radius of a growing dendrite, a key parameter in crystal growth.
What about the sticking part? Is it always 100% stick?
Good question. They suggested varying the sticking probability. Maybe particles don't stick every single time they touch, only sometimes. That could model effects like surface tension, which can influence how readily particles attach, or even allow for some slight rearrangement. Lots of parameters to explore.
So refining the model, does it have predictive power for real stuff?
That's the hope, absolutely. Beyond just understanding the phenomenon, the model could potentially predict things like the rate at which real random aggregates grow over time, or even estimate their physical properties, how strong they might be, how well they conduct heat or electricity, how easily fluids could flow through them.
So it could help design materials?
Potentially, yes. Think about designing materials with specific porosity or lightweight structures, or maybe highly efficient catalysts with large surface areas. Understanding DLA could inform that kind of material science.
And looking even broader, beyond physics and materials, where else might these DLA-like structures or processes show up? The implications seem quite far-reaching.
They really are. The authors themselves threw out some fascinating possibilities. They suggested looking for these features in processes like gelation, how substances like gelatin form a semi-solid network.
Like Jell-O setting.
Kind of, yeah, the microscopic network formation. Also in condensation polymerization, which is a fundamental process used to create many plastics and polymers. The way long chains might link up could have DLA aspects.
And biology.
Yes, they even mentioned the agglutination of biological molecules. Think about how antibodies cause antigens to clump together, or how cells might aggregate. These processes often involve diffusion and sticking.
Wow. So understanding DLA could genuinely impact fields from engineering all the way to biology and medicine.
That's the potential, certainly. Understanding the fundamental principles of how these complex branch structures emerge from simple, random, irreversible processes could provide insights into a huge range of natural and artificial systems.
Okay, so let's try to wrap this up for our listeners. This deep dive into diffusion-limited aggregation, DLA, it really reveals something profound, doesn't it?
I think so.
That even processes that seem utterly random, just particles wandering about and sticking together, can give rise to these highly structured, intricate, fractal objects, things with precise mathematical properties.
It's an incredibly powerful and elegant model, yeah. It helps us understand those wispy branching structures we see all around us, from microscopic dust aggregates to maybe even macroscopic geological formations or biological systems.
And the real aha moment for me listening to this is realizing that it's the process of growth itself, particularly the fact that it's limited by diffusion and it's irreversible, that seems to be the fundamental driver.
Exactly. It's not just about the intrinsic properties of the particles, what they're made of, or how sticky they are intrinsically. It's the dynamic journey, the kinetic pathway they take as they come together, building complexity one random step at a time. The history matters.
The history matters. That's a great way to put it.
Which leads to a really provocative thought to leave people with, doesn't it?
Go on.
If these incredibly simple rules wander randomly, stick irreversibly, can generate forms as intricate and mathematically precise as DLA clusters, mimicking things like metal aggregates and snowflake branches.
Yeah.
Well, what other complex phenomena out there in nature, things that look critical or fractal-like, might be governed by similar, elegantly simple, irreversible growth rules? Maybe things we haven't thought of in these terms before.
Like what? What kind of things are you thinking?
Perhaps aspects of biological growth, like you mentioned, the branching of neurons, blood vessels. Maybe even the irregular edges of tumors, or perhaps even in social systems. How does information spread? How do networks form? Could some of that complexity emerge from analogous kinetic critical growth processes?
So applying this DLA thinking more broadly.
Right. How might understanding these kinetic critical phenomena better lead us to new insights in fields far beyond physics? Could it help us predict complex system behavior or even design new kinds of structures or organizations based on these principles? The possibilities, much like the DLA clusters themselves, just keep branching outwards.